is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, hoop heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish home machine. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Coach Mark Anderson from the Owensboro Thoroughbreds of the TBL, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. We just watched, game four of the Eastern Conference Finals. That might have been the most ridiculous game that I can remember in recent memory. It was just, I couldn't fathom what was going on out there on the floor with both Milwaukee and, to Atlanta's credit, the guys that were on the floor played really well. But Milwaukee, I mean, I don't know how you excuse that performance.
Well, listen, I think, and this is where we were talking a little bit before we started recording. I said, you know, this might buy Bud a little out here. And I don't know how, but my take is this. This Giannis injury is going to overshadow everything that happened in the first half. It's going to completely overshadow it. I'm not saying that people are going to forget, but it's definitely going to overshadow. And it's going to dominate the conversation instead of the Budenholzer takes. They came in to a game where Atlanta's clearly best player is not playing. They come into this game completely unprepared. They looked completely disengaged. I texted you, Giannis looks lost. You can't come into a game thinking, oh, I'm hot, crap, I'm going to win this game without, since Trae Young's not playing, I know I'm winning this game. Clearly, you weren't winning this game. You lost the game. And now, Giannis is hurt. And I mean, like, I know they're saying it's a hyperextended knee. They obviously didn't do, MRI. So they're going to do the MRI. And we know what's going to happen here, Mike. He's going to be checked out. There's no way he's playing. I can't imagine there's any way that he's playing tomorrow, right? Or next game, right? What's the probability?
I think it's higher than you think, only because the fact that he walked off on his own power and then he walked back out of the locker room, and at that point, what, the Hawks were on a 12-0 run and they were down 20, and I think at that point they were like, yeah, we're not even going to think about and entertain him coming back into the game. We'll just take him back into the locker room. Now,
Whether or not he would have gone in had it been a four-point game at that point, I don't know the answer to that. The fact that he was walking on his own seems to me like it'd be a pretty good sign. I don't claim to be a doctor, neither do you, so who knows. The way that injury looked when he went down, I mean, when you saw the slow motion of the way that his leg bent, I mean, the fact that he got up and walked underneath his own power was pretty incredible. So I won't be surprised if he plays. Maybe sounds like a cop out, but I'd say 60. I say 60-40 he plays.
Wow. You're way more bullish on this than me. I don't think there's any way he plays. I don't think there's any way. Zero chance. I mean, Mike, there's so many things that could have gone wrong with his knee. I guarantee you there's a tear in there. There's no way that he just hyperextended that thing. I just don't see it. There's no way. How much that bent back. I think he's done, man. This is going to be the series. Everyone's going to remember this season as the year of the injury in the playoffs. I mean, it's at this point, it's pretty remarkable when you think about it.
Well, there's a ton of things to unpack from that statement right there, which we can get to in a second. I want to go back to your Bud point. Is it Bud's fault that they came out as listless as they are? Is that a reflection of their coach? Is that a reflection of the players? Like, watching this team is maddening, and I'm not a diehard Bucks fan, but I am rooting for the Bucks, and watching them as a fan of the team, hoping that they're going to win games, they are just completely and utterly perplexing. I've never seen two guys who have as good a resumes as Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday who fumble the ball while dribbling more than those two guys. Like, even when they drive past somebody, the ball is bouncing around all over the place. They barely have it. They're so sloppy in everything that they do. And now a lot of that you would point to and say, hey, the coach doesn't have them playing crisply and they're not executing well, but some of it's got to be on the players. And you just look at, I mean, I've said it.
Mike, but here's the most damning thing from the whole game. Okay. Bobby Portis was taking shots in the first half and I felt more confident that Bobby Portis was going to make a shot than Jrue Holiday was going to make a shot, Mike. And I know Jrue Holiday ended up leading the team in scoring, but I felt more confident with the Bobby Portis shots than I did with the Jrue Holiday shots.
I think Jrue is slow. He's just so sloppy with the ball. I don't even really care, in all honesty, about the missed shots. I just feel like there's so many times that he's driving to the basket and there's an opening and he just fumbles the ball or he doesn't dribble it hard enough. It doesn't come up and he's like reaching for it. And Middleton's the same way. Like, he gets so many balls poked away from him and he's dribbling into the lane and somebody gets a hand on the ball and then he's losing it. It's just, I don't know. I watch them and it's just frustrating to watch them try to execute things in the half court. I mean, when they're out on the fast break, I think they're pretty solid. And obviously when Giannis has the ball and he's going full speed downhill, he's pretty impossible to stop. And I even feel like in the half court, he's become a lot more difficult to play. Obviously he had that big burst to start the third quarter before he got hurt. And it looked like maybe he was kind of going to take a stranglehold and try to really will the Bucks to a win in the second half, which is kind of what everybody, I think, expected. You expected it. I expected it. The guys on TNT at halftime expected it, and it looked like it was on its way to happening before the injury. But I just, man, you watch them, and even on the defensive end of the floor, like, there's so many times they give up wide open shots, or the rotation's just a step slow, or they give up the lob to Capella. And I know Capella's really good at that, and they've got some talented players, including, obviously not tonight, Trae Young. But it just feels like Lou Will is torching them from all over the floor. I watch them and they leave you wanting. They leave you saying, boy, they're just not playing to full capacity. And again, maybe it's just the fact that, hey, shots go in like they did in game three and everything looks great. Shots don't go in game four and suddenly everything looks completely, completely different. So I just don't know how much of it is a reflection of that piece of it, at least, is a reflection of Budenholzer, and how much of it is a reflection of those Bucks players and just what they do and who they are. And as far as Bud, I mean, look, these two points kind of tie in together. But especially if Giannis is compromised, I mean, if this Hawks team, no offense to the Hawks, but if this Hawks team gets to the finals and we end up having a, whether it's Hawks Suns or whether the Clippers can come back and win game seven, which at this point, would that surprise anybody if the Clippers come back and win that series? I mean, I don't think so.
No,
either way, I mean, this finals is, I mean, it's gonna have to be the two worst final teams in a long, long time. I mean, if the Cavs of the Golden State era had faced any of these four teams, it might be a sweep. The Cavs might have, that those Cavs teams might have swept any of these four teams in a finals.
That's a good take, Mike. I like that take. You know, they were, and I don't know. I'm sure you listened. Did you listen to Simmons and Russillo? I don't know if you listened to the podcast from Monday.
Yes.
When they talked about like
the worst final teams.
The worst finals teams. This team will definitely be up there with them, right?
I mean, look, if Milwaukee were to win it, you could make a case for not putting Milwaukee as the worst. You could make a case because Giannis is a 2-time MVP. Middleton's a multi-time all-star. Drew Holiday's an all-defensive guard. Brooke Lopez has had a really solid career. You could make a case that they're not the worst. I mean, if you watch them, I think it would be hard to argue that they're one of the better finals teams. I mean, they're clearly going to be down near the bottom. But, man, if Giannis is out and either this Bucks team somehow guts it out without Giannis and gets to the finals, which if Trae Young, who knows what his status is. I haven't heard anything about whether he's coming back at all. So if you have
he looked to be walking okay. You know, I bet they were just being cautious and they said, you know what, if we lose this game and you know, it is what it is and you know, we had a good run. But now that they won this game, I mean I think it all I'll be honest with you, Mike. If I'm Atlanta, okay, and Giannis is out for game five and Trae Young is a game time decision, I'm going to do whatever I can to get Trae Young out on the floor of that game because that gives them an even higher chance of winning. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I don't know what your take is, Mike, but if Giannis is no good to go and Trae Young can't play, do you feel confident that the Bucks are going to win the game based on what you saw tonight?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. At this point, I don't think you can feel confident that the Bucks can win even if Giannis is back. I mean, even if he's 100%.
He's not going to be 100%, which is another point to make. You know,
I've been saying this for, I don't know how long, 5 months, that I don't trust any of these teams. Like, would any result from this point forward in the Western Conference Finals or the Eastern Conference Finals, would any result surprise you?
I think the only one that I can think of that would surprise me, Mike, is if like you know, one of the teams forfeits COVID protocols. I don't know, at this point this season, I don't know if that would even be a surprise, you know.
There isn't one. If you tell me the Clippers come back and blow out the Suns in the next two games, would you be surprised? No.
No.
Would you be surprised if
Ty Lue?
Would you be surprised if the Suns go home and win the next game by 40? I wouldn't be surprised. Would you be surprised if the Hawks win the next two games, especially if Giannis is injured? I wouldn't. But by the same token, would you be surprised if Milwaukee wins the next two?
No.
No. I mean, none of these teams. Like, you have no idea from night to night who, what, when, where is showing up. I mean, there's no consistency whatsoever from any of these teams, from any of the play. I don't know. Like, what players do you trust to show up every night? Giannis is probably the closest, right?
Yeah, I probably trust. You're probably
a healthy
right.
Giannis. A healthy Giannis is going to put up 30 and 10, but he still might go 4 for 10 from the line, and you still probably aren't going to him in the last 3 minutes of a close game. So then you better hope that you have a Middleton night like you did the other night, instead of a Middleton like you had in game four.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Listen, I'm not questioning you, Mike. I'm just saying, like, I just don't even know what, like, the NBA has to be, like, screaming right now. Like, that people, because this is not what they wanted to happen at all. This is not what they wanted to happen. Right? Agree?
Well, clearly, first of all, you don't have the marquee teams that you'd like to have heading towards the finals. That's number one. And now number two, I mean, you might play the rest of this Eastern Conference Finals without Giannis and Trae Young. I mean, there's a decent possibility that that happens. I don't think that's what'll happen, but we don't really know the severity of Trae's injury. And we clearly at this point have no idea what's going to happen with Giannis. So it's entirely likely that maybe neither one of them plays for the rest of these games. I mean, like I said, nothing that could happen at this point between either of these series would surprise me. Milwaukee tonight, the way they came out and played that first half, it was inexcusable to not seize that series by the throat with Trae Young sitting on the bench. It was they should have had their A+, number one, best effort. You win that game tonight in Atlanta, the series is over. I mean, it's over. Atlanta's not winning two out of three with two of those three games in Milwaukee. It's just not happening. And now it's 2-2. Your star is injured. Who knows whether he plays? And man, it's right there. It's right there for Atlanta to make the finals. And you go back 6 weeks ago and good luck finding
the Knicks.
Good luck finding a lot of people that picked Atlanta to beat New York, let alone picked them to make it all the way to the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
And do you count them out against either of those other teams if Trae gets back and is healthy?
No.
I mean, I think the Clippers or the Suns probably would be favored, but would you be surprised if Atlanta wins? No, because, again, I don't trust any of these teams. I don't trust anybody to show up on either team. Players, coaches, teams. I mean, it's maddening to try to watch and figure out from night to night what's going to happen. And it kind of goes back to the whole thing. Like even though these series have all been tight, I guess we've had a couple of close Clippers Suns games, but it just feels like the games themselves haven't been super compelling, especially not these Eastern Conference games. The Western Conference Finals have been a little bit better in terms of how close the games have been. But these Eastern Conference games, none of them
have been particularly great games. We had a game by 40. I think game one was probably the best game of the series, right? The closest game one?
Yeah. And again, that was a weird game that I think if you went back and looked at kind of the flow of it, Milwaukee probably wins and finishes that game out 7 out of 10 times. But dumb plays down the stretch. They don't make shots when they need to. Atlanta gets a big performance from Trae Young and does enough to win that game. And that's a case where, like, if you're Milwaukee, like, that's a game Milwaukee has to win.
100%.
And if you win that game, now instead of it being 2-1, it's 3-0. The series is basically over. You just set yourself up for potential Giannis injuries or any player getting injured when the longer you prolong the series. And that's kind of where we're at now. And I don't know, when you look at game five, it's so difficult to say, okay, here's what we think is going to happen. One, we don't know who's going to play in that game. And then two, even if we do, I don't know. Like what adjustments are going to be made? What lineup change? I mean, the Bucks, who do they go to? Who do they go to off the bench? I mean, Portis has been really hit or miss. Bryn Forbes has contributed next to nothing, at least in meaningful minutes. PJ Tucker,
Pat Connaughton's thrown some nice bricks up.
Yeah, Connaughton has not shot the ball well or contributed a whole lot. I mean, there's nowhere to go. I mean, there's nowhere in Budenholzer's defense as far as the bench goes. You turn and you look down, you're like, okay, I got really nothing there. I'm going to play Jeff Teague big minutes. I mean, there's nobody there. And yeah, it's just, Even PJ Tucker. I mean, think back to when the Bucks made that trade, right? And I told you at that time that I thought PJ Tucker would start and play a lot of meaningful minutes for the Bucks. And I remember you laughed at that statement. And you probably weren't that far wrong to think that PJ Tucker probably shouldn't be playing major minutes. He's had a really good playoffs in terms of his ability to defend, but offensively, he's about as close to a zero as you can get. I know he had
a bunch of points tonight, though, Mike.
He had eight tonight, but for the most part, he's giving you zero. He's giving you zero at that end, and that makes it pretty tough. That makes it pretty tough when you're playing 4-on-5, and then again, you don't have any idea what's going to happen from Middleton or Holiday. Which of those guys is going to show up? They never show up together and play well. I can't even remember a good Giroux and good Chris Middleton game at the same time. And even when they're good, they're just shaky. Like, I know Middleton had 20 the other night in game 3 in the fourth quarter, and he was fantastic and he made some great shots, but his 38 still feels shaky to me. I don't know why, but I don't know. I don't trust the Bucks. I don't trust the Hawks. I don't trust the Suns. I don't trust the Clippers.
Yeah. So here's my question, Mike. Do you even feel like you could make I think here's what we're gonna let's just break this down in scenarios.
Okay.
Let's make predictions. Okay.
Okay. All right.
But we're gonna do them. We're gonna have three different tiers. I think that's the way we have to do this because we have no clue who's even playing in the game. Okay.
Okay.
So tier one, both Trey and Giannis play.
Bucks win game five.
No. Who wins the series? I'm just saying, if they both play the rest of the series,
the Bucks win the series.
Okay. All right. Fair. All right.
You gotta have four scenarios.
Yeah, well, actually five probably. Second scenario: Trae Young is back game five. Giannis is not back game five. And Trae Young's healthy the rest of the series. Giannis isn't healthy the rest of the series. Go. What do you think?
Hawks in seven.
Okay, I agree. It might even be six, Mike.
It could be six.
Okay.
I'm gonna give the Bucks the fact that I don't trust them. I don't trust them to play poorly for two games in a row. How about that? They're gonna have a good game in there somehow.
All right. Sounds good. All right. The next one. All right. Giannis is healthy, but Trae Young is not. And this is the option I think is least likely. Is Giannis is healthy, but Trae is not. I think it's Bucks. And healthy is a vague word, right?
Right.
But I think that's probably the least likely of the scenarios. But I would say the Bucks obviously win that series. Okay, right?
Bucks in six with a huge caveat that I don't trust the Bucks. Have I made that clear yet?
Okay.
Okay.
And then
the next
one is Giannis is out for a game, but then comes back for game six. And Trae Young is in, you know, I don't know if Trae Young could be in for both games.
If Giannis plays two out of the three games, I think the Bucks win. The games that Giannis plays in the rest of the series, regardless of whether Trae is playing, I think the Bucks figure out a way to win those games. Okay. I don't feel good about saying that. I don't feel 100% confident. It might only be 51% that I feel that way, but I think that third quarter little burst from Giannis gave us an indication of, and he may not even be capable of that if he's hurt, but gave us a little indication of maybe him just saying, look, I got to do this. I got to take over. My teammates don't have it tonight. I got to do what I got to do in order to get us a win. Does Atlanta start following him? Like, at what point do you start following him?
All the time.
I mean, I'm surprised they haven't done it yet, especially when Atlanta's at home. So if we get to a game six, I expect them to start following him early and often.
Yeah. By the way, I want to give it up to the city of Atlanta. They were very classy. Very yeah, classy for him.
I agree. 100%.
Like, a lot of times you would see, like, I wouldn't say they would be, like, cheering for him to get hurt, but, like, you wouldn't have seen them, like, completely quiet. Like, you could tell, like, they were very solemn in the stadium. So I give Atlanta a lot of credit, Mike.
Absolutely. Kudos to Atlanta fans. I wonder if they showed that replay on the Jumbotron and everybody sees it. And, I mean, if you looked at that, it looked really bad. If you were to freeze frame that right at the moment his knee was the furthest it was hyperextended, it was pretty ugly. And anybody who saw that, you'd have to be a pretty non-sensitive person to not have some empathy for a guy who goes down with that kind of injury. So yeah, kudos for sure to Atlanta. It was striking. It was striking how quiet it was in the arena.
Yeah, for
sure. At least that's the way it came across on TV. Now, I have no idea how that compared to, you know, when they're pumping in noise or whatever. I have no idea. But it came across as that arena was pretty much dead silent while he was laying on the floor, and probably the way it should be. So kudos to Atlanta fans. Good. Thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah. I just, you know, I want to, like, that was huge to me. I thought that showed a lot of good things. Because I think, you know, like I said, I don't know that New York Knicks fans would have been treated this with the same respect, and I'm not trying to, like, demean New York Knicks fans, but let's just be honest here.
We had the situation in Toronto where KD went down, right? And there were people that were cheering when he was injured, and so there was a big controversy around that. And obviously it wasn't every person in the Toronto crowd, but there was enough that the whole entire crowd got painted as not being empathetic to what happened to KD. And in this case, there was nobody that was booing. There was nobody that was cheering. There was nobody. It was silent, at least as far, again, as it came across on the TV. Yeah. I don't know what it sounded like in the arena, but coming across the TV, the perception was it's silent. So the last scenario is neither guy plays at all.
I pick Atlanta. I have to. I mean, I picked Atlanta last week before because I don't trust the Hawks and I don't trust the Bucks, but I just didn't like the what I had seen from the Bucks at all. So that's kind of why I went with Atlanta in the first place. And I think without Trey and without Giannis, I mean, you saw what happened. Now, I want to be fair to the Bucks in saying that, you know, a lot of that could have been the shell shock situation, you know, like.
Right, your star goes down. It looked bad. You have no idea. He goes to the locker room. They clearly saw him walk off under his own power, which was, I'm sure, encouraging. But still, seeing him go in the locker room when you really had to feel like you were this close, at least to the finals, and you get to the finals and you're this close to being able to win an NBA title. And if you see that all crumble, psychologically, you have to think that probably had some kind of effect on him. Plus, Atlanta was just... they were just on fire tonight for whatever reason. Everybody, they had enthusiasm. They brought it. Credit to their team, to their roster, to their coaching staff. They came in not with the idea that, oh man, we got no chance because our star is out. Instead, they said, hey, we got to rally around ourselves and figure out a way to get this done. And to a man, they did that. And part of it comes down to, again, the game starts. It's 10-2 before you even turn around, right? If it was 10-2 Milwaukee, the rest of that game probably goes a lot differently because Atlanta's confidence is sapped. The Bucks are like, all right, we got this. It's going our way. We're going to keep rolling. Atlanta starts looking around. Trey's not here. We're down. We're at home. I can't believe we fell behind. Instead, you get the crowd right into the game. You build a quick early lead. That momentum kind of builds on itself, feeds on itself. Guys start shooting the ball well. Players build confidence. And we saw what happened. And it all happened before Giannis got injured. That first half, Giannis is on the floor. And the Bucks just did not bring the level of intensity and effort and execution on either end of the floor. I thought their defense was bad most of the night. Atlanta had open shooters all over the floor. I didn't think they did a very good job of containing the penetration into the lane off the pick and roll. They got a couple of Capella lobs, including the one that Giannis got hurt on. it just was a very poor performance by the Bucks and a tremendous performance by the Hawks and the remainder of their roster once Trey was ruled out of the game. They just played incredibly.
Yep. Give them credit. All right. Let's turn our attention to the other series. Before we do that, let's have a word from our sponsors.
Hey, hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's ARYSE.com.
All right, we are back to talk about the Western Conference Finals between the Clippers and the Suns. Now, the Clippers won yesterday. It was a closer game than I thought it was going to be, and in a sense that I didn't think there's any chance that the Clippers were going to win this game. I just didn't feel confident. I thought that it was over and done with, but then they ended up playing well. Paul George, I got to give him credit. He played pretty well yesterday. They hung in there. They won the game. They moved the game along. They moved the series along. Paul George scored 41 points, 15 of 20 from the field, which is ridiculous. 8 of 8 from the line, much better than his previous game from the line. So give credit to Paul George. You know, I think in the playoffs, for the most part, he's been pretty good. He hasn't been good this series as a whole. But he's also carrying all the load that is the offense for this team. So
he hasn't shot the ball well. He's played a really good floor game overall, missing those two free throws. He makes those two free throws in what game? Was that game two?
He makes those free throws
in game two, and it might have been 1-1 at that point, and now we're sitting here, Clippers up 3-2. Obviously, that changes the tenor of the entire series from there. But those are two big misses. But Paul George, I don't think if you're a Clippers fan at this point, I don't think you can really place too much blame on what Paul George has done in this series. Has he been perfect? No, but he's been good enough that you can't blame Paul George for the Clippers being down 3-2, I don't think.
No, I agree 100%. You can't blame him. He's been carrying the load. Surprisingly, at the beginning of the game, you saw who was leading the Clippers into the fray was Marcus Morris. He played really, really well.
We need to issue an apology to Skip Bayless, I guess.
No. No. Regardless, listen, I still think the Suns are going to win this series. I don't think the Clippers are going to win. I mean, has Kawhi been officially ruled out for the next game yet?
I don't think anybody on the Clippers has even talked to him.
Mike Green's call. You saw that, right? Kawhi is. I don't remember what the exact wording was. Kawhi is going crazy. He's going crazy, and they right, showed Kawhi and they're sitting there
stoic. Yeah, absolutely. Look, yeah. I don't think. Who knows what's going on with this guy? It seems like nobody in the Clippers organization really has any idea what's wrong with him, whether he's going to play or not play. At this point, I've got to believe he's done, right? I mean, he's not going to play the rest of this series. He's not going to probably play if the Clippers somehow make it to the NBA Finals. It doesn't seem like there's any indication. It's weird that he's not sitting on the bench. That's just odd to me. If you're in the arena... Like it's one thing if you're at home because you're injured and you just have to stay off your leg, then you're sitting at home on your couch, fine. But you're in the arena and you're not sitting on the bench with your teammates. That's odd to me.
There's been no photographic evidence of him walking. What if he's unable to walk right now and they don't want to give that away? That was my thinking.
So you're trying to play a game of deception to try to get the Phoenix to prepare for Kawhi, even though there's no chance he's going to play?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that it's the right tactic, but I'm saying maybe that's what they're doing. That's what I'm saying.
Like maybe, I don't know how much. I just don't know how much of an advantage that gives you. Maybe if Kawhi Leonard's a quarterback and it's before the Super Bowl and you don't know whether or not he's going to play, or you're going to have a running quarterback replace him, maybe that makes a difference. But in this case, I don't know. I just don't see it. It's a good theory and it could very well be true, but it's just weird. Again, it's weird he's not on the bench. It's weird they haven't announced a timetable. It's weird that we don't really know for sure what's going on with his knee. It doesn't seem like anybody knows. And I guess if you're the Clippers players and coaching staff, you just are preparing at this point with the fact that he's never going to play. I mean, that's the way I think you have to at this point. That's the way you have to look at it, that he's not coming back. And you're right that Marcus Morris had a really good first quarter, first half game overall in game five. I think the guy who has really surprised me more than anybody is Reggie Jackson, how good he's been. I think at one point, either a week or two
Mr.
ago,
Mr. June.
Yeah, well, I said, like, look, if Reggie Jackson's the answer to the question, then I'm not sure that what the question you're asking is the right one. But he's been really, really good. And not only good in garbage time, not only good in non-pressure moments, but he's been good when there's been Clippers runs in this series and even against Utah. Reggie Jackson was a huge part of big Clippers runs in big moments by hitting threes or getting to the basket. He's had a couple of sensational dunks in this series where I'm like, holy cow, I can't believe he got in there and dunked it on those guys. And he's been really good. He's made himself a lot of money. If I'm not mistaken, he's a free agent at the end of the year. So yep. he's probably played himself off the Clippers roster, although maybe he's played so well that the Clippers look around and go, look, if this is the guy we're getting and we're getting him at this level playing in the playoffs, then maybe he's a guy that's worth paying. I mean, I don't know what the market value is for Reggie Jackson, but it's a lot higher than it was a month ago. I know that.
No, I agree. Listen, he's going to make lots of money, and whoever pays him, I feel bad for you because this is lightning in a bottle, in my opinion.
So you don't think this is the real Reggie Jackson? Will the real Reggie Jackson please stand up?
Ooh, a little Eminem there, Mike. I like it.
I think this is the perfect role for Reggie Jackson. He's not being asked to run a team. He's not being asked to be the main ball handler. He's a guy who's playing off the ball. He's knocking down threes. He's attacking closeouts. He's getting out in transition. And that seems like a role that fits him much better than being the 1A or 1B on your team where he's the primary ball handler and he's running 35 pick and rolls a game. That I do not want Reggie Jackson on my team doing that. But it seems like I do want Reggie Jackson on my team if he's playing off the ball and he becomes a second or third creator of offense off rotations and off the ball being swung to him. He's really proven himself in that role, which means that there might be other good teams that might be interested in having a guy like Reggie Jackson if he can capture this kind of performance in the playoffs. And again, we've seen guys before have good playoff runs, get paid a lot of money, and then end up not being the player that, or reverting to the player that people always thought they were. But kudos to Reggie Jackson in this playoffs. He's been tremendous, and he was really good in game five, and that's one of the reasons why the Clippers were able to win that game.
So what you're saying is, you're sorry, Mr. Jackson, you're not for real. Do you know that reference? Did you get that one?
No.
Outcast? Okay. No, oh, sorry.
No, I know Outcast, but I don't know those lyrics, so.
I'm sorry, Miss Jackson, I am for real. There you go.
All right.
Anyways, I thought maybe you would know that one, Mike, but apparently
didn't
not.
Didn't know that one.
Sorry. All right. Anyways,
what about Phoenix? What's our take on where Phoenix is? You lose game five at home, you don't play particularly well. You're pretty much, second half. I guess they had it down to maybe six or eight at one point, but it never really felt like they got close enough to threaten the Clippers. I mean, watching that game, I felt like the Clippers had it under control. Even there were moments where it might have seemed a little shaky, I still felt like the Clippers had the game under control, and then they obviously end up winning by 14. Yeah, I mean, I don't know about Phoenix either. I mean, it still comes back to I don't really trust Phoenix all that much. Chris Paul's track record, look, he's a fantastic player, but his track record over the course of his career says that weird things tend to happen to Chris Paul. Losing to the Clippers up 3-1 would be a pretty weird thing to happen considering the longtime fate of the Clippers franchise.
I agree. I mean, listen, I still think the Suns are going to win this. I think they're going to win it.
Do they win game 6?
I think so.
In LA.
Yes, I think they're going to play well.
All right, I disagree with that. I think the Clippers.
Booker's near his girlfriend now, so he's going to have a good game tomorrow.
All right, do you know who
Booker's dating?
A Kardashian?
Jenner. Yeah, basically. Yeah. Good job. I'm proud of you, Mike. I didn't know if you had that in you.
Well, I was close, man. I mean, whatever. Anyway, that could be good or bad, depending on Devin Booker's pre- and post-game activities. Nonetheless, Booker's not a guy who – I'm not penciling Booker in automatically for 25 points. I just don't think that he's that kind of guy. Now, he's going to get a lot of shots. He's going to play a lot of minutes. But I don't know. His playoff resume is short at this point. This season is all we have to go on. And he's been really good. But I don't know that I can depend on Devin Booker to come up with a huge game exactly when I need it. Now, he might surprise me and he might get 40, just like he got, 47 in the closeout game against the Lakers. But I don't know. I don't know what to make of the Suns.
So here's my question, Mike.
Is Crowder going to come through with a big game? Mikal Bridges going to come up with a huge game? Look, again, any one of these scenarios would not surprise me in the least. Phoenix might go to LA and win by 30, or I could see the Clippers winning the next two games, no questions asked, without a problem.
Okay, I mean, it's fair. You're making fair points.
You think Phoenix in six? You think they get the next game?
I think Phoenix wins tomorrow night and we're done with it.
Okay, I think this series goes 7, 100%. There's no way I don't think that Phoenix wins tomorrow night. I think the Clippers win that game. And then we go to game 7 and throw the names in a hat. Is it Pandemic P or Playoff P? What Chris Paul do you get? Is Booker come through or not? Does Reggie Jackson and Marcus Morris Sr., do they have another good performance in them? I don't know. I think the Clippers win tomorrow night, and then Game 7. Game 7 to me is a toss-up, and neither result would surprise me. I'm going to pick the Clippers at this point.
Wow.
I don't know why. I just have a feeling that I think Phoenix missed a golden opportunity to win Game 5 at home, and I think you lose that game. You had a chance to put it away. You gave the Clippers life, and it just seems like a weird, weird Clippers season. A lot of weird things have happened to the negative side with Kawhi going down, and they've been down 2-0 in these other series, but somehow they've been able to claw their way back, and I think they're going to claw their way back and win this series and make it to the NBA Finals.
All right. Well, I guess the only question we have left to ask, Mike, on the playoff front, before we start talking about the new coaches hiring, is who are you picking?
Last week I was Milwaukee, Phoenix. I'm gonna get off Phoenix and I'm gonna go Milwaukee and the Clippers.
All right. Well, I'm going with exact opposite of what you're going with. I'm going with the Hawks because I think Giannis is done.
Okay.
I'm going Hawks and I'm going, Hawks and the Suns. Look at us. Completely polar opposite. You know what that means. We're each going to get one correct.
I would say that's probably true. And that would be a very fitting and apropos way for this finals to set itself up, because I've said it ad nauseum I don't trust any of these teams. You could tell me any scenario and I would believe you, because it's just a very, very weird mix of teams. It's a weird mix of players. It's a weird mix of coaches. I don't know what to make of any of it game to game. I don't know who's showing up and who's not. So give me Bucks Clippers, but I'm about as confident as that as I am in a coin toss. So maybe 51%.
All right. Sounds good. Okay. So let's talk briefly about the coaches that have been hired. And I guess we'll go in chronological order. Does that make the most sense? I guess that makes the most sense.
Sure.
So Rick Carlisle, hired by the Indiana Pacers. Now, here's the fun fact that I told you. I didn't even remember Rick Carlisle coached for the Indiana Pacers, because I was in high school when he originally coached. And not that I wasn't paying attention to the league, because I was, but I obviously didn't follow all the ins and outs. I didn't even remember him being the coach there at any point whatsoever. So that was a new one for me. Mike, what do you think this is? Here's the question is, does that say more about what Rick Carlisle sees in Indiana, or the fact that he ran from that Dallas must be a really bad situation because he ran from Dallas to Indiana, I don't think Indiana was the most appealing job of all the jobs that were available. Would you agree with that statement?
Okay. So let me address three things there. One, whatever is going on in Dallas within the organization, Donnie Nelson Jr. gets fired. There's the controversy of whether Bob Vulgaris, the gambling analytics guy, how much influence he had, whether that was over front office decisions, whether that was with Mark Cuban, whether he tried to get into Rick Carlisle's ear to be able to talk about playing time, whether he has Luka on his side or not on his side. There's clearly some weird things going on in Dallas, and Rick Carlisle didn't want to be a part of that anymore, which there's not many coaches who, when you have a chance to coach a generational player who clearly at some point in his career is going to be good enough to lead a team to an NBA title like Luka is, not many coaches leave willingly those types of situations. So you know something weird has to be going on in Dallas. And I don't want to take it any further than that because we'd just be guessing. Then from the Indiana standpoint, I think Rick Carlisle's reputation around the league is that he is one of he's one of the top 10 coaches in the league. He might even be higher than that.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a great hire from Indiana's standpoint, because Indiana, not a glamour market, not a roster that you look at and you're like, ooh, that team's ready made to win a championship. I'm going to just step right in and we're going to be competing to be in the NBA finals year in and year out. Indiana's roster is not set up for that. I mean, I think they're set up to be a average, maybe slightly above average team with a good coach. So from Indiana, the Pacers franchise standpoint, I think it's a no-brainer. It's a win for the Pacers franchise that they were able to bring in Rick Carlisle. From Rick Carlisle's perspective, I'm not sure that if I was him, I wouldn't have waited to see what other jobs opened up. Is Portland a better situation? Maybe immediately. I mean, it could be. I think that is New Orleans a better situation? The opportunity to coach Zion, who could be the next generational superstar. It would be interesting to know why Rick Carlisle chose Indiana. Clearly, as you said, he's been there before, so maybe he just has a comfort level with people in that organization and going back and being in a situation that's familiar to him obviously held some appeal. I'm not sure it's the most appealing job. So from Rick Carlisle's standpoint, it's kind of curious. From the Pacers' standpoint, I think it's a home run hire. So Carlisle had to make the decision, so he's obviously happy with it. So if that's the case, then to me, that's a win-win. It's a loss for the Mavericks. Although, again, when a coach has been there, I don't know how many years that his tenure was, 15 years maybe as the Mavericks coach, maybe at some point it just runs its course and it's time to go a different direction anyway. So who knows? But to me, it's a win-win for the Pacers and Carlisle, because Carlisle wanted to be there. And if you're Indiana, you're getting one of the better coaches in the league, even though you're a small market without a championship type roster at this point. So that's how I feel about that one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, listen, he's proven himself. I know he only won one championship, but, you know, he's got a relatively good track record. His teams are always relatively competitive, even if they're lacking in talent. And, you know, he's very disciplined, well-disciplined, and his teams seem to be relatively well-disciplined. So this is a great move for Indiana. I mean, obviously, I think they wanted to get a guy who had some experience after getting Bjorken and realizing that didn't work well. So sweet.
Yeah, that had to be a disaster.
All right. So I guess the next thing that makes the most sense is we're talking about Carlisle and Dallas. Let's just talk Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd hired by for Dallas. I think it's a 5-year deal I saw, right? It was a 5-year deal.
Yeah, I saw that too. Yeah.
So awesome for Jason Kidd. He was also endorsed by Rick Carlisle during his press conference for Indiana, which I thought was a little weird. But do you see that or no?
Yeah, I saw that. So strange that an outgoing coach would endorse a candidate for the job. I mean, we have no idea. I don't know for sure what Rick Carlisle's what his relationship is like with Jason Kidd. Evidently, it must be pretty good in order for him to do that. Or maybe there's some background subterfuge that we don't know about. I have no idea. But it was strange. It's strange to see an outgoing coach recommend someone for his job as he's leaving it. You don't see that very often.
No, I know. I mean, obviously, if it was a firing situation, it would have been really strange, you know, but it wasn't a firing. It was a mutually parting of ways, but still, it was just a little bizarre to me. I don't know. Bizarre. Anyways, so on that front, so we've got Kidd to Dallas. Good fit, not, I don't know, because has Jason Kidd ever proven that he's a good head coach?
I'd say the answer to that is no. I mean, I don't think he's necessarily been an abject failure, but I don't think anybody after his two stints as a head coach in the league has said, wow, Jason Kidd, he's the next coaching superstar. I don't think I've ever heard those words spoken, especially I think at the end of his Milwaukee tenure, people really felt like he was
my favorite Jason Kidd moment was when he spilled water on the floor to get a free timeout. That was pretty good.
That was good. That was a classic move by Jason Kidd. I think the other thing that you've heard talked about in relation, forget about his ability as a coach. And I think that most people would probably say that it's questionable where he ranks on the hierarchy. Whereas clearly Rick Carlisle, top 10 coach in the NBA, probably a guy that makes a difference in winning and losing on your franchise. Jason Kidd, I don't think people hold him in as high of esteem. And yet, the guy's got a pedigree as a player. He's been a head coach twice in the league. He's been an assistant coach now with the Lakers for the last couple of years. Maybe he's learned and matured and grown up and continued to work and improve himself as a coach. And maybe this will work. I think the thing that a lot of people found curious was the difficulties that the Mavericks organization has had with sexual harassment and some of the things that have gone on in that organization that I forget which one of the big, maybe it was The Athletic that published the big story about the problems that the Mavericks organization had. And we know that Jason Kidd had some domestic violence issues with his wife when he was playing. And so it seems like a questionable hire from that standpoint. Just if you're trying to clean up your organization, it seems like you might want to distance yourself from someone who had previous issues in this particular area. Yeah, in this particular area, it just doesn't seem like that necessarily would be the right fit. And that's not to say people can't change. That's not to say you haven't learned from things that have happened to you in the past. But it just seems like there were probably other candidates out there that didn't have that as part of their background check. And considering what's going on in the organization, I'm kind of surprised that they didn't think twice about this. And they probably did. They probably had discussions about it, but for whatever reason, whether it's Kidd's previous ties to the franchise, Cuban's relationship with him, who knows what it is that put Jason Kidd over the top, but it's a little bit surprising that with the domestic violence in his background that an organization that had some of those issues that the Mavericks did have with sexual harassment amongst their executives and front office, that that's the direction that they would go with the hire. But it is what it is at this point.
Yeah, I agree.
So kid's the guy, and I guess we'll just have to wait and see. He hasn't proven himself to be a great NBA head coach, and now he's getting a third opportunity with the Mavericks.
All right, so we'll go from one controversy to another. The Portland Trailblazers hired Chauncey Billups as the coach, and there's lots to unpack here because we got Dame saying that, you know, he originally said that he wanted Chauncey, but then he's like, oh, they asked me for people who I wouldn't mind. They didn't. And then there's all this other stuff from something that happened in 97. And I'm completely unclear on exactly what I didn't read into the articles and stuff.
So here's what I read, and I'm not going to get into any more than what I read. There was a rape allegation against Chauncey Billups in 1997. The Portland Trailblazers looked into it, conducted their own investigation as part of their process, and found that whatever happened in their estimation from what they were able to glean, that nothing non-consensual happened. That was the quote that I read, and that they felt 100% comfortable with Chauncey Billups' account of the situation, and that's why they decided to move forward with hiring Chauncey Billups. That's as much detail as I was able to get out of the article.
All right. I mean, that's more than I got. So you're doing better than me, Mike. So what I would say is, like, I don't quite get, like, you know, his name's been in a bunch of different head coaching candidates' jobs. And you would have thought that if this was the reason that he wasn't getting the job, that he essentially would have been blackballed, right? Like the teams aren't working completely unilaterally. They're talking, they're checking with other teams. So they're getting references. I mean, he's been working for ESPN for a while. So it's not like, my opinion on this is, I think this is, like, I don't want to demean it or belittle it or say that nothing is thing, you know, and I don't want to say that he didn't do anything wrong, because he could have very well done something wrong. But like, this is something that happened like 27 years ago. He never was charged. He never got in trouble for it. I just don't quite understand why it's being made into such a huge deal. Because, yes, it is a pretty big allegation, but at the same time, it's like forever ago and nothing ever came of it. So, like, why is it happening now? Like, I don't quite get it.
Well, I think the reason why it's happening now is the way that the media covers things and just the access that we have to the 24-hour news cycle. It's just so much more easy to get information and to share information than it was 30 years ago. And 30 years ago, maybe this is an article that's written and then it kind of disappears. When it gets onto social media, it kind of takes on a life of its own. And before you know it, it becomes something that in the past might have just kind of disappeared, but now is something that everybody is chiming in and having an opinion on, including us. And probably most of us are not necessarily up on what the facts of the case were. And nobody's sharing anything. As I went through the article and as you're talking, I'm kind of looking through it. And what it says here is that Billups was never charged formally, but he did settle a civil suit with the woman who accused him of rape back in 1997. And then there's some quotes from Chauncey saying that he learned a lot at the time and he has had lots of conversations with his wife, who was his girlfriend at the time, his daughters, about what actually happened and just some of the things that he experienced as a result of that that have impacted him for the rest of his life. And again, that is what it is. I don't know what any of that means necessarily, but it just shows to show you that things that have happened in the past that maybe 20 or 30 years ago wouldn't have been a factor in whether or not you get hired or get a job, those things are going to be, anything that's in your closet is going to be found out and made public if you are somebody who has a high profile job in professional sports. Like, those things are not going to be able to stay hidden because somebody's going to find them and share them. And once they get shared once, they're going to be everywhere. And you can bet that you're going to have to address those things. Yep. And that's the situation that we're in here. I think the interesting thing, once we get beyond that particular issue, is Chauncey Billups has been a hot candidate for a lot of jobs. And by a lot of jobs, I don't mean specific coaching jobs, but I know back when the Cavs were considering hiring a front office person, right? A GM, that Chauncey Billups was a name that was at the top of their list. And I know he's been on other front office searching, he's been on the top of other front office searches. And now here you have him in a coaching search and taking over for the Trailblazers for Terry Stotts. So look, we have no idea whether or not Chauncey Billups can coach. I'm always a fan of hiring somebody who is new to the job, because maybe you end up finding somebody who's good, as opposed to as opposed to getting a guy that we kind of know what they are. Although Nate McMillan, I guess, is the argument against that, because I think when you look at Nate McMillan's hire, you would have said, well, he's just a guy who...
Well, he hasn't been hired yet. He's still an interim, Mike, which is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life.
But nonetheless, you get what I'm saying, that Nate McMillan is sort of a guy that would fit the profile of the kind of coach that I wouldn't necessarily want to hire. Somebody who's been in the league for a long time, has had decent success, but never been considered to be one of the best coaches. And so I'd rather take a chance on a new guy who potentially could be the next great coach in the league. So I'm fine with this hire, just kind of putting aside the 1997 incident. We don't know enough about it to even pass judgment on it in any way, shape, or form. But just from a basketball standpoint, Chauncey Billups has been pretty well regarded in terms of jobs that his name has been mentioned and attached to in the past couple years. So it seems like he's a candidate that lots of organizations had an interest in. So from that standpoint, I mean, we don't know anything about him as a coach, what kind of style he wants to play, what his coaching philosophy is. But just the fact that it's somebody new blood, I think Portland needed that. The next question becomes, how do they shake up their roster? I saw something today that Zach Collins broke his foot or fractured his foot again.
Yep.
And he's going to be a free agent. So you got to believe that Zach Collins will not be – he may not be in the league, but he's definitely not going to be back in Portland. They're not going to pay him to sit in the hospital like they have for the past few years. He's just been so injury prone. So I think the Blazers roster probably looks different. I don't know if they trade McCollum. I don't know how real the Dame Lillard rumored I may want out. I don't know how real that is or not, but we'll see. We talked a little bit before the pod about, do we want to get into speculating about Ben Simmons and Damian Lillard and where they end up going. And we thought we'd maybe hold off on that because nothing's going to happen until we get past the NBA Finals, and then we can kind of talk about some of those things.
But I bet you nothing's going to happen until around the draft. I mean, to be fair, though, once the finals are over, the draft's like a week after that. So, you know.
Yeah, it comes pretty – yeah, it's going to come up pretty quick.
And then free agency is going to happen right after that, because the season, once again – you know, it's going to the season's going to be fast tracked again because they're starting it in October. So there's not going to be as much recovery time again for these players. Now, way more recovery time than they had this year. You know, they only had a month and a half, but, you know, it'd be interesting to see how they handle this with all the injuries that we've had. Like,
They're not going to change anything. I mean,
they're not going to change that. But what I'm saying is, are they going to, what are they going to do as far as like training camps? Are teams going to have to scale back? Now, obviously teams like the Cavs who haven't played since forever, you know, they're not necessarily going to have to do that, but some of these other teams, like, they're going to have to scale things back. I think like they're not going to,
I'm sure teams have clearly scaled things back this year. I know that most of the teams during the season hardly, if ever, practiced formally together as a team. A lot of times they're spent watching film or talking, or maybe the bench players are getting in and getting individual workouts or some small group workouts, that kind of thing. And I would anticipate that next season probably is going to look very similar to this season in terms of how teams try to manage players' workloads. And you just look at the injuries and, man, it's tough. It ultimately comes down to, I mean, year in and year out, we've seen it that injuries, like it or not, injuries play a huge role and who wins an NBA title. And this year, regardless of which team wins it, injuries are going to play a huge factor in those teams getting to where they get, and whoever ultimately wins the title, injuries are going to have a huge, huge piece in and a huge say in who ends up winning the title this year.
I agree. All right, Mike, do we want to talk Olympics really quickly? Do you want to talk about the roster? What do you think? Do you think we wait to do that until
later? Just talk about it quick. I don't think it's a huge, I think it's maybe a 3-minute discussion. I don't know how much there is to really talk about it, but go ahead and give me your thoughts on it, and then we can go from there.
Okay, so really quickly, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the roster first. I think that makes the most sense, right? So yep. The roster is as follows. And these are the 12 players. We got Bam Adebayo. We got Bradley Beal. We got Devin Booker. We got Kevin Durant. We got Jeremy Grant. We got Draymond. We got Drew Holiday. We got Zach LaVine. We got Dame Dollar. We got our guy, Kevin Love. We got Chris Middleton, Jason Tatum, coached by Pop, obviously, Pop Kerr, and Lloyd Pierce, which is hilarious that Lloyd Pierce is on the coaching staff and he doesn't even have a coaching job in the NBA. So I guess my takeaway is if they lose a game in the Olympics, they should be ashamed of themselves. Kevin Love, I hope you're ready to serve all of the players with be in charge of, like, getting food orders and things like that, being that guy, because I don't see you getting a lot of run. But congrats to him. I think, you know what, from a Cavs perspective, they probably hope that he plays really well and that he does play, because then maybe they can trade him. I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but, you know, the Cavs probably want him to do well. I mean, you know, they
I would agree with that.
Like, because then maybe they can get something for him if he shows up. You know, I saw a lot of people like, oh, he's not healthy in the season. Of course he's healthy for this. I'm like, well, listen, that is what it is. Like, are we complaining that he wasn't healthy during the season? Because if we're going to complain, then and he would have played way more games, then we wouldn't have gotten the third pick in the NBA draft. So, you know, we could talk two ways about this. But I'm happy for him. I hope he plays well. And, you know, we'll just have to see what happens.
My take on the roster is similar to yours in that I think it doesn't have every A-lister in the league playing, but you start off with Durant. I think we saw in the playoffs, it's a pretty good start. You build your team around Kevin Durant. I think things are going to look pretty good. I guess the two guys that you would question whether or not they should be there, Kevin Love obviously is one. And I think Jeremy Grant, you could probably make a case that there should be somebody else. Maybe could have gotten that spot. You have no idea, though, who they asked for sure.
Well, you know, Chris Paul declined. James Harden declined because of the hamstring. So, like, we know some of them, like, but we don't know all of them, you know?
Let's put it this way. I'm sure they asked LeBron. I'm sure they asked Anthony Davis. And those guys clearly declined. And the roster that we have, even with Jeremy Grant and Kevin Love as your 11th and 12th man, is far superior than anything any one of our foreign competition is going to run out there for the Olympics. So I would expect that, barring something unforeseen, that team should be able to just roll the balls out and win the Olympic gold medal, especially with Popovich as the head coach. You got to believe that he's going to have that team as prepared as they possibly can be, considering that some of their players may show up the day or two before the first game. But ultimately, talent wins. And the U.S. should have the most talented team, regardless of the fact that we don't have every single one of our top players. But the guys that are there, the guys that we do have, clearly should be enough to be able to win the gold medal. I mean, there's no doubt. You might like to see a little bit more. I don't know, some more role players, maybe, is a better way to say it. In those last two spots, I'm just not sure what Kevin Love and Jeremy Grant bring you that you don't already have on the roster. Whereas maybe you bring a guy who's just a shooter, or maybe you bring a defender, or maybe you bring a role guy, you know, just a role player. I don't know who those names are. But again, if we're quibbling with guys 11 and 12, it really doesn't matter, because the first 10 is going to be more than enough to be able to win Olympic gold in Japan.
Yep, for sure. I agree. All right, we did it, Mike. That was like 3 minutes. That was good. We did a good job there.
Let's cross our fingers and hope that Giannis is okay. Let's hope Trae Young can come back. The series is way more compelling when those two guys are on the floor. Who knows what percentage they'll be at, even if they do come back. But I'd much rather see the series decided with the two of them on the floor than see it decided with both of them in street clothes. And
Trae's injury clearly. They did announce that Giannis will be getting an MRI tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, and that's not surprising anymore.
We'll see what comes back. Hopefully, I think he's going to play. I think that whatever, if he gets diagnosed with a knee sprain or something, I think he's going to try to play. Again, you just don't get many opportunities. And the opportunity here in front of Milwaukee is one that I think if he can go in any way, shape, or form, I think he will. I think Trae Young will be back before this series is over. And that's the way we hope it happens. I mean, I hope these two teams are at full strength and that's how the series is decided rather than with one or both of them sitting on the bench in street clothes. So fingers crossed for Trae and for Giannis. And if we get that, we should have at least an interesting remaining Eastern Conference Finals. It's maddening trying to figure out and watch these teams and figure them out on both ends of it. But it should be an entertaining next few days as we wait and see what the results are of the medical diagnoses, and then we see the results of these games. And as we've said over and over again, I don't trust any of these teams. I have no idea what's going to happen. You could give me any scenario and I would believe you. So come next Tuesday, we will know who our NBA finalists are, and we'll be ready to roll and take a look at what the finals are going to bring us. Should be interesting.
Definitely should be interesting. And we'll see what happens. Right?
Absolutely. We want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight to our weekly NBA pod here on the Hoopheads podcast. We appreciate that. Be sure to check out our interview episodes, which drop every late Sunday night into Monday morning and late Thursday night into Friday morning. Be sure to check those out. You can check out all the other great shows we have going on the Hoopheads Pod Network. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.